Let us now look at the GLB Act or the Graham-Leach-Bleeley Act. Again, let's follow the same methodology. Let us look at the Act, what was the objective of the Act, what were some of the important sections of the Act, and the cost-benefit analysis, and then we then evaluate how important was this Act for the companies. So, the GLB Act or the Graham-Leach-Bleeley Act altered the regulations regarding the banks, investment firms and insurance companies, allowing them to merge and offer various financial services. Now, this was again one of the landmark acts which allowed the companies to merge their financial transactions. So earlier they used to operate as separate entities, and we will look at the case of Citicorp and Travelers Group, where they kind of merged their transactions into one. So this was one of the landmark acts which allowed them to do this. Prior to the GLBA, these entities were required to operate separately, but the act changed this, enabling them to provide diverse financial services under one entity. So say the bank would also be able to offer insurance. So assuming that there is a entity, say let's put it this way. There is Kotak Mahindra Group. Okay, Kotak Mahindra Group is able to offer multiple different services under the same brand. So things like banking, insurance. So Kotak Mahindra Bank is one of the entities providing banking services. Kotak Mahindra Life Insurance is the company that provides insurance for life. Then there is Kotak Mahindra General Insurance that provides insurance for, say, vehicle insurance or travel insurance, etc. Then there is Kotak Mahindra Securities, which provides DMAT accounts and trading in the financial markets. Etc. Right. So these are some of the different services that could be clubbed under one single entity, that is Kotak Mahindra Group. So this was what was made possible in the GLBA Act. So just taking you through this example for simplicity. However, in India, you still have different entities who are listed on the public stock exchanges to maintain their separate books of accounts. The GLBA aimed to enhance the accessibility for individuals to save and invest in a single location, irrespective of the economic conditions. So, as I said, different businesses could be merged under or could be considered under one single entity. The notable impact of GLBA was the merger of Citicorp and the Travelers Group to form Citigroup in 1998, which violated some of the previous laws but then was later legalized by the GLBA. Despite facilitating mergers, GLBA still maintains certain regulations to segregate specific banking and investment activities. So although these could be different entities coming under the same roof, you could merge the businesses, the specific activities or the P&L from banking and from investment activities still need to be segregated. So there are certain regulations which says that the banking activities, the operating activities and the investment activities still need to have separate books of accounts. So let us look at some of the objectives of the Act, right? The stated purpose of the Act is to ensure that the financial institutions respect the privacy of the customers and protect the security and confidentiality of non-public personal information. Now, the main reason why this Act came into effect was for protection of the customer data. The PII data, the personal identifiable information, so things like say the social security number in US, you can link that to the Aadhaar number in India, or any kind of personal identifiable information. So these have to be maintained, how it has to be maintained, proper disclosures, not sharing this information with everyone, not sharing this information with third party vendors, etc., etc. So that was the main purpose of this act, to ensure that institutions respect the privacy of the customer data, ensure the security and confidentiality of the customer information. Again, so name, credit card number, social security number or the personal identifiable number, phone number, address, etc., etc. So these are all personal information. So if the personal information has to be shared for any kind of business purpose, then how the proper security norms have to be in place to ensure that the customer privacy of the data is maintained. So this was the topmost objective of the act. Protect against any anticipated threats or hazards to the security or integrity of such information, and protect against any unauthorized access or the use of customer information that could result in substantial harm or inconvenience to any customer. So, say sharing of the customer information with any other third party, which could use the customer data for activities other than what the purpose of the data is, was something that the Act really prevented, right? So, important thing to note here is the foremost objective of the Act is to protect the customer information, maintain the confidentiality, ensure that the security and integrity of such kind of customer information is maintained, and at the same time ensure that this customer information is not shared with any kind of third party or agency which can cause harm, either a financial harm or inconvenience to the customer in any form. The objectives, so the GLBA aims to protect the customer rights and prevent any unauthorized access to the personal information. Securing customer data was or is not just a legal requirement, but also a requirement to maintain trust and confidence. Now, imagine a situation where you transact with a bank and the bank obviously has different information like, say, your Aadhaar number, your income statement, your place where you stay, your phone number, what is or a high probability of your income range, etc., etc. Now, imagine if this information gets shared with any third party, like say a NBFC. So imagine some non-banking financial institution calling you saying, "Hey, Mr. X, I know where you stay, and I've called you on your mobile number, so I know what your mobile number is. I also know your Aadhaar number. I know what your income is. Would you want to take a loan?" Now, this is absolutely scary, correct? Hence, it is important that this information, the customer confidential information, is kept confidential, not just from a legal perspective, but also to ensure the customer confidence. Now, if someone calls you and you then get to understand that the source of this data leak was because this data was shared with some banking institute, so then you would not want to transact, right? Because imagine if a bank is sharing this kind of valuable information with someone unauthorized, then this could mean loss of trust even in the primary business operations. Correct. Other objective was to identify theft posing significant risk, including fraudulent transactions, financial losses. So imagine an imposter transacting in someone's name if he has all the relevant information, like say mobile number, etc., etc. So that is also a grave threat and could lead to any financial or fraudulent transactions. The Act emphasized the need for financial institutions to handle customer information responsibility, to prevent identity theft and maintain the customer trust. Identity theft can include details around, say, name, number, phone numbers, date of birth, social security number, credit card number, financial accounting details, income statements, details around all the financial transactions, details of the major financial transactions done, etc., etc. So these could mean, as I said, theft, identity theft, but it could also lead to financial losses, maybe some kind of fraudulent activities around financial crimes, etc., which is uncalled for. So what does the GLBA Act do, correct? So like the SOC Act, which had 11 sections, the GLB Act also consists of certain sections, although these are 7 sections. Let's look at all of these. So the first one, the first title looks at facilitating the affiliations amongst the banks, securities firms, and insurance companies. This title enables the affiliations amongst banks, security firms, and insurance companies by creating financial holding companies and subsidiaries with broader financial activities. Now, because the different entities, like say the banking, insurance, and securities, they could be merged under one particular entity. So what the Act said, that what you could do is you could form a holding company. So the holding company would be the main company with having controlling stakes in all the three entities. So just imagine this, like say Bajaj Holdings, right? I'm giving a popular example in the Indian context so that it's more relatable. So Bajaj Holdings having controlling stakes in Bajaj Finserv, Bajaj Allianz Life Insurance, etc. And this group company has the controlling stake in all of these, so that it's one entity and having the broad financial activities. The second title is to do with more functional regulation. So this title regulates the bank's securities activities and requires the registration of the banks advising mutual funds. So it also addresses the SEC oversight of hybrid products and allows investment bank holding companies to choose SEC as the primary regulator. Now, because there were two different sources of income from different business activities. So you had the banking activities, you had the security activities, and hence it is important to see which is the regulator that would maintain the regulation, right? So hence this particular title requires the registration of the banks advising the mutual fund. So it addresses the SEC oversight. So earlier, everything, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the holding companies had to choose SEC as the primary regulator. The third is around the insurance. So the third title addresses various insurance related matters. Things like national banks, insurance activities, mutual insurers, re-domestication, and regulation for rental car agencies and insurance. So the third regulation, so one, the first was to do with banking regulations. I mean, the second title was the functional banking related regulations. The third title has to do with the insurance related regulations. The fourth was the unitary theft. So the holding company provisions. So this particular title prohibits commercial entities from acquiring or establishing new unitary thefts. Now, unitary thrifts are more related as the source of income for any holding company. So the details around how the holding company has to operate, what are the rules and norms for reporting incomes under the different heads was covered under the Title 4. The fifth, more importantly, was to do with privacy. Now, this was the main objective of the act, right? So this title includes two subtitles. One was the disclosure of non-public personal information, and second was fraudulent access to financial information. So it mandates financial institutions to disclose privacy policies, obtain customer consent for sharing non-public personal information, and prevent fraudulent access to financial data. So whenever you see maybe say certain screens on financial companies, they would obtain customer consent saying that, do you allow the data as non-public personal identifiable data to be shared? So this is one of the privacy norms that was part of the GLBA Act. Title 6 spoke about the Federal Home Loan Bank System modernization, introduced reforms to the home bank loan system. Title 7 spoke about the other provisions. So this included various unrelated provisions such as disclosure requirements for ATM surcharges, agreements concerning the Community Reinvestment Act, plain English rule marking, etc. So these were the popular seven titles or the sections in the GLBA Act. The major component of the customer protection under the GLBA included four different subsections. So let's look at that. So first, as I said, the financial privacy rule. This required financial institutions to provide customers with a privacy note explaining the collection, the sharing, use, and protection of their personal non-public information. So, as I said, there has to be a consent for the customer saying that the customer allows the institution to share this kind of data for non-public use. Customers have the right to opt out of this particular scheme as well. Opt out of sharing this information with any unaffiliated parties. The second was the safeguard standards. So this mandates the financial institutions to develop a written information security plan to protect clients' non-public personal information. So it requires a risk analysis of the current processes and measures to safeguard the private data. So as I said, maintaining a written information security plan to protect the client's non-public personal information was one of the important considerations of the act. The third was addressing unauthorized attempts to access personal non-public information such as impersonation or phishing attacks, posing as the individual to get the personal identifiable information is something that the Act had very important safeguard measures to protect against these kind of unauthorized access. So this particular section aims at prevention of unauthorized access through various communication channels. So these were the three broad contours of the Act, the GLBA Act that it prevented. Data breaches in financial institutions often result from human errors or due to inadequate training, maybe lack of awareness or management oversight. So measures to ensure GLBA compliance includes clear policies, management guidance, risk analysis, effective controlling and monitoring mechanism, incident management, and independent audits. So, although GLBA Act aimed at protecting the personal identifiable information, the privacy, and the controls for maintaining confidentiality of the customer data, to ensure that the organization complies with the GLBA Act, there has to be clearly defined set of policies with endorsement from the top management, and ensuring that the people who are accountable or the employees who are accountable to ensure the enforcement of the act, they are adequately trained, they have the right amount of awareness, and deploy the right amount of controls to ensure that the act is effective. Effective employee training is crucial for the compliance of GLBA, involving best practices, things like creating employee awareness about what kind of information to be shared. In case of IT companies, you would see popular screensavers saying that do not share this kind of information, do not share or maintain these kind of best practices. And there are periodic trainings also in many companies which ensure that employees have the right amount of awareness and understanding. So things like involving best practices, knowledge management, evaluation of training effectiveness to enhance security controls and protect the customer data. We now look at another act, that is the HIPAA Act, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, popularly known as HIPAA or the HIPAA. Any organization who deals with the customer health information has to comply with the HIPAA. So HIPAA enacted in 1996 ensures continuity of health insurance coverage for people changing jobs, implements administrative simplification rules to improve healthcare operations. This has two parts, Title I and Title II. So we will look at again the important objectives and some of the titles in this particular act. So Title I of HIPAA looks at safeguarding individuals' health insurance during job transitions. Now, important consideration here is whenever an individual, and I'll give this in the context of US because this is meant for employees in US. So what happens is personal insurers is the insurance is a big thing in that particular country. When you are on a particular job, the employer bears the insurance cost because insurance cost is huge. Now what happened is, suppose if you are in between two jobs, right? So then you don't have insurance. So Title I of HIPAA looked at health insurance during this job transition phase. The Title II focused on administrative simplification, establishing national standards for electronic health records, and provider IDs to ensure that enhanced data security and privacy are maintained for the health records. So one was digitization of the health records, and Title II focused on digitization of the health records, and also to ensure that the data privacy and security for the health records was maintained. The HIPAA Act grants privacy rights to individuals aged from 12 to 18, requiring the service providers to obtain the consent before sharing any kind of health information, covering all healthcare related data regardless of any type. Right. So again, having the customer consent before sharing it with any of the affiliated parties was one of the important considerations in the HIPAA Act as well. Compliance is essential for organizations managing electronic and paper health records, ensuring secure handling of patient data, and promoting effective healthcare delivery. So having the right amount of security in place to ensure that the electronic records of the healthcare data is maintained with the top kind of confidentiality. Who does this act apply to? So the HIPAA Act compliance is applied to all healthcare providers. So any provider of medical or other healthcare services that bills or is paid for the healthcare in the normal course of business, they are referred to as covered entities, as defined by HIPAA and HHS, that is hospitals, clinics, and practicing physicians. Healthcare clearing houses, right? So who are the clearing houses? The businesses that process and facilitate the processing of health information received from other businesses. So these are termed as business associates, that is, say, laboratories where the medical records get processed, or insurers, diagnostic documentation, claim processing, law companies or law firms. So sometimes there could be a case where there is a dispute in terms of granting the insurance. So that's where the law firms come into picture. But ensuring that the health information received from these kind of entities also receives the same treatment of confidentiality, the law firms come under the clearing houses. So as business associates, ambulance services, pharmacists, etc. So these are collectively called as business associates. Subcontractors, that is firms, individuals who have been outsourced from the business associates. So say there is an insurance agency who takes care of the insurance claims and the claims processing, but they have outsourced the operations to maybe any third-party vendors. So even those come under the HIPAA Compliance Act. The Title II has of the HIPAA Act has five rules under the administrative simplification. So these rules are first and obviously the privacy rule, then is the security rule, the unique identification rule, enforcement rule. So let's look at all of these. The first is the privacy rule. So as the title suggests, it regulates the use and disclosure of protected health information or PHI held by covered entities, including healthcare clearing houses, employer-sponsored health insurance plans, medical service providers, etc. The second is the transaction and the code. So part of the HIPAA administrative simplification process aims at standardizing the healthcare transactions. It requires all the health plans to engage in transactions in a standardized manner, making the healthcare system more efficient. So what happens is all the covered entities, they have to engage into transactions in a more standard manner. So say when taking a diagnostic test or going under any particular treatment, there is a particular format in which the reporting has to be done. The third focuses on the digitization or electronic protected health information, so EPHI, and outlines the three kind of electronic safety requirements for compliance. So one is the administrative compliance, the second is the physical, and the third is the technical. It specifies various security standards and implementation for specification for each type, distinguishing between required and addressable specifications. The fourth is the unique identifiers rule, so mandates the use of national provider identifier, that is a NPI covered by the HIPAA covered entities. And so this is more like a unique number, a unique identity associated with the entity. And the fifth talks about the enforcement rule, so sets penalty for, say, any kind of business associates violating the HIPAA rules, sharing of healthcare records, information regards to the health, and establishing the procedures for investigation and hearing in case of any kind of violations. So these are the popular five titles under the Act 2 or the Title 2 of HIPAA. Let us now look at the Data Protection Act. We will look at the GDPR regulation. And more importantly, from the India perspective, let us look at the Information Technology Act of 2000. So the Data Protection Act in Europe has two main laws. One is the Data Protection Directive of 1995. So the first law to regulate personal data protection in the EU and establish principle of data collection, data usage, transfer, with regards to every entity. So we will look at GDPR as one of the most popular standard in the EU that was deployed, requiring EU countries to have national laws that comply to these policies. So this was under the Data Protection Directive of 1995. The second was the GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation, and it replaced the earlier data protection directive, offered stricter data protection requirements. This aims at giving people more control over their personal data, how the data has to be classified, different data categories, etc. Is part of GDPR. So as I said, for any organization doing business in European Union, compliance to GDPR is a must if any kind of customer data is involved, any kind of data regarding organization is involved. So these kind of security checks, the compliance to these are a must have for doing business. Both these laws aim to protect the personal data privacy, and we'll talk more about this in the next sections. But the GDPR provides a very wide and a more comprehensive framework for protecting the personal data.